Well, in the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, the preacher, who is the author, has been looking for the meaning of our existence. There are various clues within the book that make us almost certain that the preacher is in fact King Solomon, David's son. For example, he not only describes himself as a king in Jerusalem, but as the wisest of all who were before him. He also describes his personal wealth, which included various houses, luxurious gardens, and hundreds of concubines. A brief look at 1 Kings will confirm that Solomon is the most likely candidate out of all the kings in Israel to be the preacher in Ecclesiastes. And in his search for true meaning, the preacher has declared that everything under the sun is vanity. What does the word vanity mean in this context? It's not talking about when you look in the mirror and you enjoy what you're looking at. No, vanity in the context of Ecclesiastes is that everything in this world that this world offers is but a vapor. It's brief. It's without real substance. It's like the steam in your kettle when you flick the switch to make the kettle boil. It's there for a moment, and then as soon as that kettle has boiled, the steam vanishes. That, according to the preacher in Ecclesiastes, is what life is like without God. Last time, the preacher examined the belief that a person is able to find meaning from pleasure. So we saw him following his heart to pursue whatever his heart desired, whether that was beauty, whether that was leisure, whether that was riches, or whether that was sex. But in all of this, the preacher found that these things were just never enough to satisfy his search for meaning. And so he characteristically declares, it is also vanity. It's brief, it's without substance. It's like a vapor, here for a moment, gone the next. And so now in Ecclesiastes 2, verses 12 to 17, the preacher turns to consider another possible meaning for life. He turns to consider if wisdom and knowledge will succeed where pleasure has failed him. Look there at verse 12. He says, "So I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly." And so what did the preacher learn about wisdom? Well, firstly, the preacher tells us that wisdom has benefits. Wisdom has benefits. He begins by giving a positive perspective about the pursuit of wisdom. Now, we need to be clear about what the preacher means when he says wisdom and madness and folly. Now, it's important to know that these are not three categories, these are two categories. There is wisdom being one category, and the second category is madness and folly. The preacher is describing two things in two different ways. One thing in two different ways. And so as we think about what does he mean by wisdom, it would be helpful for us to think about one of the Lord Jesus' parables, the parable of the wise and the foolish builders. I don't know if you remember that one at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. You'll recall that there is a wise builder, and this wise builder built his house on the rock, having dug down into the rock and laid a foundation to begin with. But there is also a foolish builder who's building a house, and he has built his house not on stable and immovable rock, but he has built his house on moving sand, unstable, liable to shift. And so when the storm comes and the floods rise, it's only the wise man's house who is able to withstand the tempestuous weather. The foolish man's house falls down, collapsing around him and taking his life with it. Now, the point that Jesus is making in that parable is very simple. He is comparing those who heard and did or put his word into practice with the wise builder. So Jesus says, wisdom is understanding what is right and then applying it to everyday life, putting it into practice. It is those who hear my word and who do them who I will liken to the wise builder. So what is a fool? Well, the fool is the opposite. A fool is someone who, Jesus says, who knows what the right thing to do is and then deliberately, intentionally does what they know is wrong. And it's in light of these definitions, these biblical definitions, that the preacher concludes that in life it is better to be wise than foolish. It is better to know what is right and to do it than to know what is right and to do the opposite. And to support his claim, Solomon provides two benefits that wisdom has. In the first place, he says wisdom is socially beneficial. Just look there at verse 12, and specifically the second sentence in verse 12. Now, this is a sentence that is very difficult to translate from the original Hebrew, but one commentator suggests it can be paraphrased in this way. How will future kings handle the same problem I have faced? What kind of person will my successor be in his attitude to the same problems I have had to deal with? And so the preacher's point is this, the king in Jerusalem, his point is this, that one day I'm no longer going to be here. Future leaders will come after me, and what sort of leader will they be? Well, if they are wise, they will learn the lessons that I have learned myself and recorded for their benefit. They will face the same political dilemmas that has faced those who have governed before them. And these historic figures, these kings and governments who have come before, have an accumulated wisdom through their successes and through their failures. And if they were to pay attention to what has gone on in the past, how leaders, how the preacher and how other kings like David have dealt with those situations, they will be able to look and go, either that was the right way to act or that was the wrong way to act, and then do likewise or do the opposite. And therefore, wisdom has a social benefit. If only we will be students of history. A society that forgets and ignores the wisdom of the past is utterly doomed to repeat their mistakes. If we will not look at the history books, and I don't know about you, but I really feel that our society has increasingly got terrible memories, short memories. I don't think our society is able to look a week ago at what someone says and be able to see what they're saying today and understand that there's a difference. We've got amnesia in our society, I'm convinced. Let alone to look back at past governments, at past leaders, at past laws and see some of the wisdom that is in store there. I mean, I don't want to rattle anyone's cage this morning, maybe slightly, but it was strange to me during the pandemic that we had this word come into our vocabulary on such a common level, looking at this strain of COVID and the damage and terrible things that was going on. And they said again and again, unprecedented. Unprecedented. And yet any student of history would look back and go, that's not unprecedented. There were these things have happened before. Let's learn from how they were dealt with and the mistakes that were made and the successes that happened then. You see, that's what King Solomon says. This is a benefit of wisdom if we will simply learn from those who have gone before us. But secondly, wisdom is morally beneficial. It's in verses 13 and 14. There the preacher says that the difference between wisdom and folly is as stark as the difference between night and day. Now, I remember doing my Duke of Edinburgh as a teenager, and we had to do a certain amount of hours in the community, and the group I was in opted to go to the local fire station. And they were great opportunities in my teenage years, spending time there. And I remember one of the sessions that we had, the firefighters made us do an exercise where they were wanting to simulate what it is like to enter into a burning building, or at least a building that is filled with smoke. And so they had blindfolded, sort of blackened out these gas masks that they would wear. And we had to feel our way from one end of the room to the other wearing these gas masks that had been blacked out, with our hand in front of us and not going like that, but going like that. If you're listening, I'm sorry you can't see that, but not with the palm of our hands, but with the back of our hands, feeling our way through. And we weren't in a burning building, just so you understand. It was not dangerous in any way, but they had put various obstacles out. And while we were blindfolded, essentially, we would stumble and we would bash into things. And it was very, very scary at times, even though we were in a very safe and pretty small room. But it felt like the room had grown even bigger and was unending, never sure when we'll get to the other side. You know, that describes humanity in its natural condition. Blind and stumbling around in the dark. When we don't live with wisdom, we are likely to stumble in life. We're likely to fall down. We're likely to live in such a way that we cause chaos, and that everything around us is disastrous. You see, the Bible often uses the picture of darkness and light to describe both spiritual and moral insight. But here it's likely that the preacher is more focused on the moral aspect than the spiritual one. He will get to the spiritual one. He says the wise person is like one who has their eyes in their head, walking around with clear vision, able to avoid simple things that would otherwise trip them up. You see, the wise person endeavours to understand what is morally good and lives by that standard. Even cultures who deny God's existence will agree that it is intrinsically better to live morally than not. Our standards may vary from place to place, but cultures all over the world will agree that we must have a moral code for society to work. And it is better to be wise, to understand what is right and what is wrong, and to walk with eyes in your head, knowing what is right and doing it, than to stumble around in the dark, getting yourself into all kinds of messes. So according to the preacher, to live wisely is far better than the alternative. The alternative is to live foolishly. So if they take notice of history, then future generations will be benefited by our accumulation of wisdom. So this is why young people, this is why children who are in the service this morning, don't dismiss your parents' advice, because they have been where you are now. Don't think they're just nagging or getting on your case or they've got nothing to tell you. And you know, sometimes we've all been there. We were sometimes, at least I can speak for myself. I can't speak for anyone else. But at one time, you know, I believed everything my parents said. You know, that sort of age, you're very young, believe everything your parents ever tell you.
And then you start growing up and you get to this age where you're not quite an adult, you're not quite a child, and you start believing that everything your parents tell you is nonsense. That they don't know what they're talking about. That you know more. Well, wisdom is not to think that way. If you don't think that way as a young person, you're wise. And that's a good thing. Your parents have advice to give. Listen to them. And Christians, members of this church, don't disregard the concerns or the counsel of those who are older in the faith. Why? Because they've seen it all. They've seen it all. All our new initiatives that we think are brand new and no one's ever thought about this before, they saw it happen when they were younger. They tried it. And they know how it can work and where the pitfalls are that we need to avoid. And they've also seen things fail. We need to not disregard older saints. Older saints, we need your wisdom. Thank you for being with us. But wisdom will also protect us from so much trouble, as it enables us to understand the difference between what's right and wrong. The person who doesn't understand the difference, or who even does understand the difference and disregards it, will find themselves walking into all kinds of dangerous situations. Or find themselves making enemies of the wrong people, or even friends with the wrong people. So let me ask you, are you living according to wisdom, or are you living in the dark? Which would the preacher call you this morning? Wise or foolish? But more than important than that, Jesus says, those who hear my words and put them into practice, I will liken to the wise person. But those who hear my words and does not put them into practice, I will liken him or her to a foolish builder who built his house on the sand. So there's the benefits of wisdom. But secondly, the preacher tells us that wisdom has limits. Wisdom has limits. I don't know if you've heard of the painter, I hope I pronounce his name correctly, Hans Holbein, or Holbein. Have you heard of him? Hans Holbein? You have, Sarah has, good. Well, he acted as the matchmaker for King Henry VIII. He had the responsibility as a very important artist of painting the portraits of eligible women that Henry might like to marry in the future. And so at one time, and by the way, he was politically astute, as you would have to be in that situation. He was instructed to paint a true likeness of the future wife of Henry, Anne of Cleves, and her younger sister. He was sent to them in person, and he was appointed that the portrait must be lifelike. In other words, Henry wanted the defects. He didn't want it airbrushed out. Because even back then, in the history of this country, before we had social media and I can't remember what the names are, but that's showing my age, isn't it? We have, you know, all these things that can airbrush stuff out. They were doing it then. They were doing it then. Nothing new under the sun, says the preacher. And so Holbein goes and he comes back, having met Anne of Cleves and her younger sister, having painted a portrait of them. And Henry sees this portrait and he thinks this woman will be suitable to be the next queen. However, when Henry finally met Anne in person, he was disappointed. Holbein had left out. He hadn't left out the defects, he just had improved
what Henry considered her dullness to be. Sorry, that's not my words, that's Henry's opinion. Holbein had failed to paint a true likeness of the future queen. But Henry, regardless, married her. And it was only due to his political genius that Holbein was able to escape being placed in the Tower of London like others before him who had made similar mistakes had done. So far, Solomon has painted a somewhat idealistic portrait of wisdom in this world. He's leaving out some of its blemishes. But now he turns to the blemishes, to the limits of wisdom in a sinful world like ours. And there's two things. Firstly, wisdom is limited by mortality. Verses 14 to 15. Wisdom is limited by mortality. Remember, this is the wisest king of Israel speaking. And as he considers the benefits of wisdom, he perceives that they are not guaranteed. However wise a person might be, they are as unable to avoid the troubles of this life as the fool is. Jesus said, "The rain falls on both the righteous and the unrighteous alike." But more than this, the wise person is just as unable to avoid death as the fool is able to do. Wisdom and the accruement of knowledge and information and even living a moral life cannot save you from death. Solomon, the wisest king who ever lived in Israel, the wisest king who attracted the fascination of the nations around him, was buried just the same as some of the worst and most foolish kings of Israel. Wisdom is limited by mortality. And when you really think about that, it will put things into perspective. What is the point of all of this accruement of information and knowledge and wisdom when at the end of the day it cannot save you from death? It can be halted in a moment. But then the second limit is that wisdom is limited by memory, verses 16 to 17. I said earlier that wisdom is beneficial for the future generations who are willing to learn from the past. But there's a problem. What if those who live in the future forget to read the history books? What if that history isn't recorded properly? It isn't long after we have died that we are forgotten, along with all the lessons that we learned. I challenged you last week and I challenge you again. Go out in the cemetery out there and have a look at the gravestones that are still readable and tell me if anyone in here remembers anyone out there. We're forgotten in a moment. We have a plaque over there of Lawrence Cheshire. Some of you have seen that week after week for years. Are you able to tell me who he is, what he did, without looking? You see, in a moment we're forgotten. All our accolades, all of our wisdom, all of our grades at school, all of our certificates that we receive, putting in letters after our names, all forgotten by future generations. But this isn't just even on an individual level. This is on a international level. This is on a historical level, of a communal level. Archaeology in recent years has found sophisticated civilizations like Mesopotamia, once lost in a moment by war or disaster.
It was fascinating to me to visit the exhibition that has been at the British Museum of Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia, remember, is the civilization that Abraham came from. And if you've been through Sunday school, you'll have seen the pictures of that they creatively portray when they think about Abraham, because he was a nomad. He went on to be a nomad. You know, we have this sort of idea that everything was very basic, and they all were very, you know, they didn't have very much at all. And yet, archaeology has shown us that Mesopotamia was incredibly advanced for its time. In the technology that it had put together, in the things it was doing, and yet when it was replaced by another civilization, they simply bulldozed it and buried it, and its advancements were forgotten for centuries. And so this final observation causes the preacher to say he hates life. And he is grieved because it's all a vanity. It's all a vapor. But listen, Solomon here has been considering wisdom that comes from man. I do not believe at this time he has been considering a wisdom that comes from heaven. Remember, he is exploring life under the sun. But he is going to glance above the sun to the God who brings meaning to all that we do in this world. But he is exploring the options of what is life like without God in the picture. What is the purpose of life? Can you find meaning without God? And the answer again and again is no. You can't. Pleasure failed him. And though human wisdom is beneficial, it is limited. It cannot save from death. It cannot save from being forgotten. And the person who trusts in their wisdom and their knowledge to fulfill their lives will come to hate life itself. Even Vulgate, Vulgaire, isn't it? He, this wise philosopher, is reputed to have said that the problem is I hate life, but I'm afraid to die. What is the point of accumulating all this wisdom when it simply vanishes like a vapor in the end? Well, the good news is that though man's wisdom cannot save us, though man's wisdom cannot bring meaning to us without God, there is a wisdom that can. It's a wisdom that I read about at the beginning of this service this morning from 1 Corinthians chapter 1. We find that in the New Testament, Jesus Christ is described as the embodiment of God's wisdom that has come down to us from heaven. Here is the one who lived according to God's way in every aspect. He understood what was the right thing to do was, and unlike you and me, he perfectly did it. He never deviated from it. He lived according to God's way in every aspect. And what did he do with that life? He lay it down on a cross as a substitute for guilty sinners like you and like me, so that he would take the punishment that we deserve, so that he would die in our place. For the Jews, the cross, Paul says, was a stumbling block. Why would the promised king come into the world and die on a cross? And for the Greeks who relished in philosophy, the cross was intellectually foolish. But it was the only way
men and women, boys and girls could be saved from their sins, because there Jesus was taking the punishment that only he could take on behalf of his own people. And the good news is, those who receive Jesus as Lord and Saviour today, who receive the wisdom that comes from heaven, will not be lost in death, because Christ has conquered the grave. He rose again on the third day. And those who receive the wisdom that comes from heaven, who is Jesus Christ, who is our wisdom, we will not be forgotten by God, because we are remembered by him for eternity, as we have the hope of being with him for eternity. And the good news is, if anyone lacks in this wisdom, you simply need to ask God for it, and he will abundantly and freely supply it.